Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of Media Voices, bringing you all the news and the views from around the media world. I'm your host, Chris Sutcliffe.
I'm Esther Thorpe.
And I'm Peter Houston.
Esther, you have a fascinating interview this week. Who did you talk to?
This week I spoke to Klaus Enevoldsen, who is Flipboard's head of growth. So we spoke about how they're aiming to be the new platform for time well spent, no irony, how their human-led algorithms work to surface quality content, and why publishers should trust them. So I got in touch with him on the back of recent figures to suggest that Flipboard now refers almost as much traffic to publishers as Twitter. So we talked a bit about their user growth over this year and where they're planning to take that.
Amazing. But we have a packed news week this week, so we're going to dive straight into it. And just as an illustration of how packed it is, on Thursday, we thought we had everything squared away and this was going to be it, that we had the news roundup already done. And then on Friday, the biggest what the f*** story maybe of the media year so far broke. So Facebook has gone and hired ex-leader of the Liberal Democrats, Nick Clegg, as their head of global affairs and communication. So for our non-UK listeners, Nick Clegg led the Liberal Democrat Party in a fated coalition with David Cameron's Conservatives between 2010 and 2015. And he's supposedly ideally positioned now to be almost... to go out and defend Facebook in terms of, you know, regulation. He's supposed to be their spokesman for this kind of stuff. Nobody saw this coming, right?
Sure, I would have loved to have seen the search traffic spike to Nick Clegg's Wikipedia page on Friday.
It was like when the royal baby got announced and apparently searches spiked for when does spring start? Because the baby's due in spring. But this one's even more off the wall.
Wait, there's a royal baby?
There's yet another royal baby. So... Nick Clegg said on Facebook, he said, Facebook must tackle the thorny questions around how technology is affecting society, not by acting alone in Silicon Valley, but by working with people, organizations, governments, and regulators around the world to ensure that technology is a force for good. Now, I mainly saw incredulity and a little bit of anger as a result of this. Why would that be?
Oh, because it's Nick Clegg.
Who, for our US listeners, betrayed you personally.
Yeah, well, he absolutely did. I voted for the dipstick in whatever it was, 2010. That whole election campaign was bizarre. It was like he became the people's darling. I agree with Nick, and then he absolutely betrayed the British population. Well, the British population that has any kind of a heart by. Going into coalition with the Tory party.
The coalition wasn't the problem, though. It was what he gave up to get the coalition that was the issue.
Yeah, his soul.
And there's been a lot of resentment towards him in the UK. What do you think outside the UK, though? Because he does have, leaving aside his politics, he does have a position that will allow Facebook to fight its corner in this sense.
What I don't understand is if you're Facebook and you're kind of looking around at the world leaders, the world influencers, if you say I want a politician, if you're looking at global politicians, what stands out about Nick Clegg? I really don't get it, unless it's the fact that you think, oh, actually, he's probably quite malleable, which sounds harsh, but no, seriously.
Yeah. You think that he will capitulate immediately?
No, of course he will, but that's not the point.
Sad face. It'll be his sort of, he'll just pull that sort of sad face he pulls and roll over.
There's two reasons I think that Facebook has taken him on. One is his connections, because he's very well connected in Europe. He used to be a Eurocrat and he knows loads of people. So he can maybe soften the EU's, or certainly lobby for the EU to soften their approach to Facebook and social media regulation, and that's what they think. But the other one, was that I don't know when it was, maybe September or actually probably longer than that. He wrote this kind of defense, this weird defense of Facebook and The Guardian. So he's probably seen as one of the few politicians that's actually going easy on Facebook.
So is this one of the things you now play out a job interview in a Guardian column?
Yeah, exactly.
Zuckerberg's been after him for months. He's known about this for quite a while.
Yeah, this is the idea is that he has effectively been being wooed by Facebook for quite some time. But speaking of the Guardian columnist, there is an excoriating article from Carol Cadwalla in The Guardian this week, basically saying, if you're on the side of democracy, Nick, why are you going to work for Facebook?
You know what? I just find this so hard to talk about because it's so bizarre.
Yeah.
I think it's not PR-wise. I think Nick Clegg, in a month's time or less, is going to wake up in the middle of the biggest shit show imaginable. and think, what have I done?
He won't be in Britain. He won't be in Britain, and that's the important thing.
And you know what? I think that's the other reason that people are pissed off at him. Because in Carol Cadwalader mentions this. She's like, oh, Nick, you're there. You're defending the EU. You're a knight in shining armour and keeping Britain in the European Union. And, oh, no, wait a minute. You're f***ed off with your Spanish wife who gets you a Spanish passport, and now you're living in Silicon Valley. And I think people do feel a lot betrayed.
It's not like he's going to exactly have the easiest job, because Facebook's shitstorm of a year has continued because there's been enormous backlash as it's been revealed that Facebook has knowingly inflated its video metrics for quite some time. Now, that seems like it might be a sort of, you know, footnote in the sort of, oh, look, Facebook's bad ad behavior has continued. But the shitstorm really began when people pointed out that as a result of those video metrics being inflated and Facebook not doing anything about it for months, and in fact deliberately misleading publishers about this, so as the, you know, such are the allegations, that this really began the pivot to video, which saw huge swathes of journalists lose their jobs as publishers chased that Facebook video traffic, which, as it turned out, didn't really happen.
Oh, I think it's easy to blame Facebook for this. Yes, Facebook shouldn't have done this. I think they've had an influence, but there was a spokesperson from Mike that said actually that Mike's decision to build out their premium video journalism newsroom was taken way back in 2016, and that was a result of growing digital video consumption. And they said that they've seen that across all platforms. You know, they're not just relying on Facebook for that. And I think if you are a publisher who relied on Facebook and you saw Facebook's figures and just took that, you deserve what's come to you in this sense.
Well, that's true.
But the problem is, again, who pays the price for this? All the poor bastards that got laid off, because hundreds of trained journalists, hundreds of trained editors got paid off so that people could hire some videographers. And actually now the videographers have probably got paid off.
But at the same time, there is, as Esther mentioned, there is huge audience demand for digital video. If you look at all the consumption habits, all the consumption trends, people are choosing to watch digital video, particularly digital mobile video. And Facebook, even, you know, if it inflated the actual metrics for this, was trying to push that as well. They saw where consumption was going, and that's why they tried to boost the amount of video they had on the platform.
But again, I was reading a piece today about this, and actually it's, I don't want to call it social video, but kind of cheap, easy to make, quick laughs do very, very well. But video that you can actually monetize, video that you can stick a 30-second ad on the front of because the video isn't 10 seconds, is still, I mean, it's expensive to produce. It's very, very difficult to get a return on. And Facebook has kind of basically said, oh, this isn't working in newsfeed, so let's create a watch tab and shove everything there instead.
It's there. That's part of their ongoing campaign to be the internet. They want that to be the sort of the YouTube section of Facebook's internal internet. And, you know, it is mentioned that kind of originally publishers did start pushing into that because video CPMs were originally very high because of that shortage of inventory around that kind of content. But that's rapidly become a thing of the past, as there's, you know, there's huge amounts of video now. But I mean, if even Facebook cannot monetize digital video of that kind, what hope is there for anybody else?
And the Media Voices view on this one has been expressed many, many times, I believe. I think it's like everything else. It's that idea that there's a magic bullet, or we're really struggling, we're not making enough money, so let's press the video button and we'll make loads of money, or we'll press the distributed content button and we'll make loads of money, or we'll press the native advertising button, whatever it is. And it's just ad contrarian. Do you know ad contrarian?
Yeah. How can you not know ad contrarian?
Bob Hoffman. So he agrees absolutely 100% with Esther on this one. And he's talking about the clowns that are suing Facebook.
Oh yeah, we should mention that there are lawsuits now against Facebook as a result of this.
Yeah, and they're suing them because they knew it and they didn't tell them and all the rest of it. And Bob Hoffman basically says that you're an idiot if you don't know your own business. If you didn't know enough about your own business to know that video wasn't going to work for you, then you're an idiot.
I mean, it's easy to understand why they'd feel aggrieved by this. You know, if you look at the actual excerpt from the lawsuit, which Jason Kent, CEO of DCN, posted the other day, you know, Facebook didn't disclose this, that the metric was wrong, for over a year, even after they knew the fact.
And also, this comes back to this thing that Facebook have done this so many times before. You know, this is a circle that keeps going around. Facebook announced something new and shiny, live video, ooh, let's jump on it. Instant articles, ooh, let's jump on it. And they have consistently failed to deliver. So why do we still trust them? Why do people still follow them like sheep?
to be fair, it feels like this might be the end of publishers kowtowing to Facebook, because if you look at what's actually happening with referrals and traffic coming from Facebook, it's fallen quite sharply. And so everything that we talk around, you know, referrals from Flipboard and everything, and referrals from Twitter, is in light of the fact that Facebook referrals to publishers are falling. They are no longer as central to distributed publishing strategies as they once were.
But, and there is quite a key point that when I speak to Klaus later, he actually brings out, is that, you know, because the next big thing is Apple News. Everybody's going to Apple News because Apple News has got millions and millions of views and audience figures and all that. Where is the money? And if you cannot see the money straight up, and this is the difference with Flipboard. Flipboard are all referral traffic, so publishers take care of all the money themselves. If there is not a straight up, easy, straightforward way to make money, why are you doing it?
Never mind, where's the money? Where's my sad trombone button?
Moving on then. Craigslist founder Craig Newmark is not the enemy of journalism. So why is he called a newspaper villain in an NYT write-up? So the background to this is New York Public Radio announced a $2.5 million gift from Craig Newmark to expand its newsroom, which brings his total philanthropic efforts involving media in the last year to $50 million, which much of it is centered around New York. But in writing it up, the NYT called him a newspaper villain, and there was a bit of a pushback from a lot of media commentators who mentioned the fact that, you know, actually anybody who's donating this much money to try and keep some individual outlets afloat cannot be an enemy of journalism. So what's the background to this, Peter? Why did people frame him still as a media villain?
Oh, because he won. And they lost.
That is it in a nutshell, isn't it?
Exactly. And they say that the victor writes history, but not in this instance. You know, I think that the story goes that Craigslist drained $5 billion from American newspapers over a seven-year period. And they obviously see that as $5 billion stolen from them.
Yeah, they make it sound like it was siphoned from them, like they, like Craig Newmark tunneled into their oil reserve and just nicked it.
Yeah. And he didn't. He just, I think I've heard you use the phrase before, Chris, he just built a better mousetrap.
Yeah, I took that from somebody on Twitter. But yeah, that's exactly it. He just happened to recognize the fact that classifieds would inevitably move online because, you know, people by habit will post to, you know, the cheaper places that have the wider reach, and newspapers wouldn't be that place forever.
No, like, no offense to him, but if he hadn't thought this up, somebody else would have come along years later or months later. You know, we've got Gumtree, we've got loads of different kind of similar services, so why is he getting the blame for this?
But is it's not even a competition. You know, at the time he may not even have realized. I seriously doubt he went, you know what, this is going to put a huge dent in newspaper revenue, but I'm going to do it anyway. I think he went, well, here is an opportunity to actually serve some people, make some money off them, and just didn't realize that this was going to be, you know, take a huge chunk out of newspaper revenue.
Definitely. And if there's a villain in the piece, it's the media management themselves. Thomas Bechdel is brilliant on this. He's mentioned by Craig Newmark himself, and he's mentioned in this New York Times article. He says, "We in the media insisted on keeping the classified market limited and high-priced so that it supported other parts of our business. It was only a matter of time before someone realized there was a more efficient way to do this." Amen, yeah. Thomas.
I think I saw somebody tweet, what is, you know, the Ford Motor Company now the enemy of horses just because they came up with a more efficient way of doing this? And we mentioned it's an incredibly busy news week. So here are just a few of the stories that we didn't have time to mention, but that we'll put out on social and we'll include in our newsletter this week. So Netflix has beat earnings, but clouds are on the horizon for the streaming service as cost of licensing and creating original shows have an impact on subscription costs. Financial Times is launching a new tool to help knowledge-hungry subscribers track their reading. Tortoise Media Kickstarter has blasted through its targets, so it looks like we're going to have another slow news outlet. The Economist is to redesign its paper edition. NYT Inscribed are bundling. Future is closing GamesTM and GamesMaster. All our thoughts go out to the people who are going to be affected by that. Lena Dunham's feminist-leaning Lenny Letter is shutting down. And The Guardian now gets more revenue from consumers than from advertising, which obviously 4 or 5 years ago would have been unthinkable.
That's not the point. That's not the point of that story, though.
Go on.
Well, they've been getting more revenue from consumers than advertising for a while now, since the beginning of the year. The point of this story is 12% of it comes from donations, one-off donations, and they've got a 20% target on that. That's the interesting part of that story. We are now able to offer transcripts of our interviews thanks to our partnership with Trint, who have a clever AI automated transcription tool for audio and video which almost manages to deal with even my Scottish accent. Look out for more details both about them and the transcripts in our weekly newsletter. And if you want to get in touch with us, we can send you access to those transcripts early on a Monday.
So this week I spoke to Klaus Ennevolten. He's Flipboard's head of growth, and I talked to him about becoming a significant source of referral traffic for publishers and what sets them apart from other platforms. So he starts off by explaining what Flipboard's mission is and how they've evolved over the past 8 years.
Since day one, Flipboard has been on a mission to inform and inspire the world. And so how do we do that? We're really a curation platform where people come to consume quality content. And on one end of the spectrum, they come to get the best news of the day, the most important news of the day. On the other end of the spectrum, people come to go really deep with their interests. So, for example, I'm into mountain biking. It's one of my big passions. So I've set up a magazine on Flipboard where I can go really deep into mountain biking. So I'll go and I'll read reviews of mountain bikes. I'll look at the craziest jumps that happened over the weekend. I'll see how Rachel Atherton did in the downhill. I'm also into politics, so I have a magazine for that. I'm into self-improvement. So to sum it up, Flipboard is really one place for your work, life, and play.
And I think the reason I wanted to get in touch with you this year is because Flipboard's had some quite phenomenal growth this year. You're going to, it was 145 million users was the last number I read. Is this measured by people who have the app installed by default, or is this like actual active users?
Yeah, good question. Take a step back. It's really astonishing the growth that we've seen. But to be honest, we're not really too focused on the number in itself. We're really focused on ensuring that it's quality audience that we have on Flipboard. So when you look at that number, we're really conscientious about the number we put out. So our measure for how we put people into that number is a high bar. So to answer your question, the only way that you're really part of that number is if you have actively opened Flipboard and engaged with Flipboard in any given month. And that could happen both you have downloaded the app, or it could be from the app that comes by default on Samsung devices or other places, or it could be if you go to our website and you engage there. So that's the answer to your question on where the number comes from. But as I mentioned, it's really what we're really focused on is ensuring that it's a quality audience that we have.
And is there a reason particularly behind the rapid growth this year?
Well, I think there's a lot of answers to that question. I think this is sort of like the right time for Flipboard. We truly believe that our time has come right now. So if we try to break it down, on the one hand, what Flipboard stands for, what I mentioned earlier about informing and inspiring, is really something that we see are resonating with audiences across the world. Users come to Flipboard because they want a quality experience. There's in this world today, it's a world of fake news, of dubious sources. And so one angle is that people are really looking for this haven, high quality content haven. And the other thing that we see, the other trend that we see is that people, their mindset has shifted. They're very conscious about the time they spend on their phones. And so with Flipboard, they know that here's a quality experience. So that's sort of one angle of it. Like people, our time has come for people because of the environment that we live in. On the other hand, we are constantly evolving the product. The platform is constantly being updated, and we are making product improvements all the time. I'll try to break that down a little bit for you. So we often say that we sort of sit at the intersection of algorithms and editorial. And So on the algorithm side, on machine learning side, we have a dedicated team that sits up in Vancouver, and their sole job is to improve a recommendation engine. You come to Flipboard, and we have over 30,000 topics that our audience can engage with. And they sit every single day, and they tinker with our algorithms and our recommendation engine to ensure that we put the right content in front of the right people.
So it's almost a human-led algorithm then?
Yes, that's, I like what you're saying there. That's exactly right. We, as our editor has said, we are sort of a technology company with media values, right? So you have the algorithms, but we can't let the algorithms run amok. It has to have oversight. So we combine the great work that our machine learning team sits and do up in Vancouver, but then we have editors, and we have between 25 and 30 editors across the globe, and they sit, and not only do they have oversight of the algorithms, but they also work with publishers to create great curated magazines, right? So it's the oversight, it's the vetting, but it's also creating these packages that we put in front of people. I'll give you a couple of examples of that. For example, in the politics section of Flipboard, we have the feed of the best political articles of the day, but we also have our editors sitting and curating a section that's called right, left, and center, where we give perspectives from both sides of the political spectrum.
That was going to be one of my questions, is how do you keep that balance?
Yeah, so that we are unbiased in that perspective, but we are not afraid, as Mike McHugh, our founder, says, we're not afraid to make judgment calls. Those judgment calls is not about political bias. It's about, is this news trustworthy? Is this fake news, or is this factual, right? That's where editors come in and make those calls.
I mean, this is something that I feel like a lot of other tech platforms have really struggled with, is how do they define quality without kind of getting a little bit political? So how do you guys define like a quality publisher?
Yeah, that's a really good question. First of all, we have a vetting process. So in order for publishers or any content creator to be surfaced in Flipboard, it goes through this vetting process. So we have an actual editorial board of editors with journalistic backgrounds, and they have specific guidelines. And we have written many blog posts about this. We call it the Truth Series, actually, and you can find it on our blog. So we have guidelines. So when they vet, they look for is this, they have what we call a domain ranker. So it's, again, algorithms and humans that are working together. So I'll give you one example. They look into see, does this website have bylines? Does this website issue corrections, right? And some of these signals, it becomes very clear, very fast, if it's a trustworthy domain. So that's one side of the vetting process. The other side is, of course, we also want a quality experience. So we're looking to see if this website has an extreme overload of ad pop-ups. Is it a slow site or a fast site? So all of these things combined is part of this vetting process.
What's the difference between you guys and Apple News in the way that you surface the content to publishers' sites?
Well, first of all, I will say it's great that you bring that up. It's like we are very fortunate to have some fantastic competitors. And some of the things that Apple are doing right now, we feel is something where we have led the way, right? So we talked about the curation, something that we pride ourselves on. But I think number one, Flipboard is a publisher first type company. We are very, very publisher friendly. At the end of the day, Flipboard won't succeed if publishers don't succeed. So we're here to make publishers succeed. So that's one thing. The other thing is, we are also a place where you can engage with 30,000 topics, right? Any topic that you're interested in. And that's really unique, the way that we are coupling this high curation publisher focused with 30,000 topics. And then we're platform agnostic. We are on any platform you can think of. We're on smartphones, we're on tablets, we're on website, and we're across the globe.
And I think one criticism I know Apple News and other competitors have faced is that Slate recently published a post that said they can make more money from 50,000 page views on their own site than it does from 6 million page views on Apple. So do publishers have a similar problem when they come to Flipboard? And kind of what's your revenue proposition for them?
Well, I think it goes back to what we just talked about is like Flipboard was has from day one been publisher friendly. We're here because of publishers. We're here to serve the publishers. And it's we look at that as a privilege. So we are working with publishers to make them successful. So in our conversations with publishers, you know, it became clear early on, we would ingest all of their content on Flipboard. And that was in the name of creating really good user experience and making sure that the content was presented very nicely. But as mobile websites have evolved and publishers are really doing a fantastic job in laying out the content on their sites, we worked with them and we realized we should just be sending the traffic directly to publishers. So now when you engage on Flipboard, every time you engage with an article, you're going straight to the publisher's site. So then they can monetize on their own. And that's a main difference here.
The recent figure I've seen with the referral traffic, which is where Flipboard's kind of, it feels like it's suddenly come into the equation, is that they're just behind Twitter and Google News at 1.8% of referral traffic. What are your goals for the next couple of years regarding that sort of traffic?
Actually, I was just, now that you mentioned that, I was thinking, I saw an article last week where Chartbeat was saying that that we have 2x'd the amount of mobile referral traffic over the last year. And I know, you know, some months it's we're higher than 1.8. It's we're over 2%. And for some publishers, we're the number one referral source. So it's really gratifying to see that trend. And so you know, on one hand, what's the goal? Well, of course, we want to drive more traffic to them, and we do that by creating a great product that our users want to engage with. But as we also touched upon a little bit, it's one thing is the volume of traffic, but what we also hear from publishers is that it's quality traffic. So the traffic that they get through Flipboard, they tend to stay longer on the publisher's site, and they tend to go deeper when they are on the publisher's site. And that's super important for us. Earlier this year, we did a study with Cantor and Millward Brown. It was a mindset study where we went out and we studied over 2,000 smartphone users in the US and UK to see what were their motivations to open social apps and news apps. So we compared Flipboard to Instagram, to Facebook, and Twitter. And one of the things that stood out was that Flipboard over-indexed dramatically on the motivation to invest in yourself. So it goes back to this mission we have to inform and inspire. People really come to Flipboard because they want to advance themselves. So as I go deep in my mountain bike topic, you know, I'm immersed, I'm deeply engaged. So, you know, there's a direct correlation between that and then spending more time with the articles and going deeper into topics. And that's something that the publishers really value.
And is that something you don't think social media platforms are kind of getting across quite as much? You know, I can follow sort of fitness and wellness topics if I want on Instagram or Facebook, but I think there's always been a bit of a disconnect there between publishers wanting to reach people and actually getting that kind of depth through.
Right. Well, I think it's about mindset. It's about the moment that you tap on that app icon to go in. It's like, what are you set up to do, right? So Mike McHugh, he often says that we don't want to be empty calories. We don't want to be, the analogy is you eat popcorn, you eat some chips, and you eat chips for 20 minutes. And then you feel guilty because you realize, oh, this was empty calories. So when you go to Flipboard, you're not getting empty calories. You come with that mindset, whereas in other apps, you are casually browsing and you're mindlessly, you know, fumbling around. That's, I think, is the main difference.
One of the features that users can use, you've already touched on it, is called magazines. You know, you can create a magazine around your interests. Why call it a magazine and why not sort of a news feed or newspaper or something similar?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've been in this industry for many years, and I have a great affection for magazines myself. So I might be a little biased here in my answer, but when you think about what a magazine is, in the good old days, magazine is basically a collection of pictures, stories, and articles that are put together around a theme, whether it's a topic or an event. And as part of that experience, it's an immersive experience. It sort of have a thread throughout. And advertising is part of the content, right? Think about that. You can't, if you ask a Vogue reader if they want the thin version without the advertisements or they want the thick version with the advertisements, we know that they want the thick version. It's part of the magazine. So when Mike McHugh, you know, thought about Flipboard back in 2009, you know, it was with those principles in mind. So that's sort of the founding story of Flipboard.
And what's the revenue proposition for Flipboard? You know, how do you guys actually make your money?
Yeah, so we're an ad-supported platform. So similar to back in the analog days, it's like advertisement is part of the experience here. So, you know, when we talked about the mindset study, when people come with intent and they have the context around the things that they are really passionate about, they want to engage with the advertisement. So in that same study, we saw that ad recall was over 2x from other platforms. You can imagine when I'm in my mountain bike magazine and I then see an advertisement for Trek mountain bikes, I'm much more likely to engage with that advertisement. The other side of it is because of this quality environment that we create, our advertisers, they get a very brand safe environment, right? And we are able to control that and give them some assurance that they are not going to be up against fake news or clickbait and spam. We just finished a co-promotion with Fitbit where we created a community, a content community where people that are into fitness and health could curate a magazine together. And then at the end of the campaign, you could win a trip to go work out with a fitness instructor in San Francisco, right? So it's a unique place where content brings people together around their shared passions.
And how are you planning to grow outside the US?
Well, Flipboard is already a global platform. When you think about it, 20% of our audience is in the US. 80% is the rest of the world. So on the user side, we're really already a global company and we're growing everywhere. On the revenue side, you know, historically the focus has certainly been the US first, but one of our biggest priority is Europe. So we have a dedicated team in Europe, in the UK, that are actively engaging both with advertisers and publishers to advance our cause there.
And one thing I think to round off, publishers have had, I think you could probably call it a pretty rough year in terms of their relationship with other platforms. Why should they trust Flipboard?
Well, I think it goes back to what we talked about. We're here because of publishers. We're here to win with publishers. We succeed if publishers succeed. And I think we're not just talking. You can see it through the actions that we're taking, that we're here to work with publishers. And I see this just that I sit with the editorial team here in California, and every day they're on the phone with publishers and content creators to come up with creative ways to get the best quality content in front of our users. There, we have a Medium post with Mia. She's our head of content here, or she likes to call herself the head curator. And she is curating this franchise we call The Culturist every single week, where she puts together the best music, the best TV and movies you have to watch this weekend, everything around entertainment. And she works closely with publishers to find out what the best content is. We worked with Washington Post on a package for the midterm election here in the U.S. to curate all of the visual graphs around the midterm election and put that in a nice package for our users to engage with without all of the information overload. So why should they trust us? Well, because we work with them. We're here for them.
And finally, we ask all our guests what the last thing was they read or saw which really affected them.
I'll give you my business answer first. Because I read both. I read on Flipboard every single day. But if I think about the books that I read, as part of our executive team here, every summer we have summer reading. And some of the assigned, we have our own little reading club. And some of the assigned reading was, there's two books. There was a book about growth mindset, but then we also read a book by John Doerr. John Doerr is on the board of Flipboard, and it's about the OKR process. It sounds super dry. OKR means objectives and key results. It's about how you set plans and strategies for your company. But John Doerr has managed to take an operational principle and make it super engaging. So that book was my favorite over the summer. All the anecdotes he had about companies in Silicon Valley and how they grow. OKR was a process that was introduced back in the 70s, but it's what Google was founded on.
Okay, we're going to tell you again, we have a newsletter. It contains lots of great stuff, including what we're reading, insights into this week's interviews, transcript links, that's a new one, and all the news we've discussed this week. Even the stuff that we didn't discuss, we put links in so you can go off and chase the stories for yourself. Sign up, the link's on the website and on the Twitter profile. I can't believe you've not done it already.
Talking about I can't believe you've not done it already, if you don't follow us on Twitter, please do. We post all the most important media news and views each week as they happen, so you get a more up-to-date list than what we've just discussed. And you can find us at Media Voices Pod. For bright orange, you can't miss us.
Until next week, when we're going to be back with another fantastic guest, thank you very much for listening and goodbye.
Bye-bye. Bye.